You are Locked On MLB Prospects, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And here's your host, Aram Layton.
This is a Locked On MLB Prospects, your go-to podcast on the future stars of Major League Baseball. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm a prospect writer and analyst, as well as the founder of JustBaseball.com. And in today's episode, we have a good one. The day has finally come. I have released my top 100 prospect list, and you can go check that out at JustBaseball.com so you can follow along. While I go through some of the biggest decisions I had to make on this list, I'm going to make my case for some of the guys that I know will probably be a surprise to some. I've already gotten a ton of feedback, and I appreciate everybody's kind words, and I'm glad that everybody enjoyed reading this prospect list that has already. I put a lot of time into the write-ups. That's why it took so long. The first 50 prospects have in-depth write-ups, like super in-depth, that you'll see if you go check it out, just from everything from the fundamentals of their swing to their numbers to where I think they're going to go and what the long-term outlook is for them in terms of what they can be and what's holding them back or what is needed for them to reach that ceiling. It was a lot of fun, very exhausting, over 26,000, 27,000 words, I believe, once you consider all the write-ups and add them all together. But it was really fun to be able to put all my thoughts on paper, or virtual paper, if you will, and just kind of see what everybody thinks. So the one thing that I did here that I think was a last minute bump and some people have been very surprised by is how high I put Francisco Alvarez. And that's something that, you know, I figured would be a bit of a early jump to it. And I'm saying early because I think Francisco Alvarez is going to be in everybody's top five very, very soon. And not because of the people ahead of him graduating. It's not going to be one of those classic slide-ups, though that will also aid it. But even if you didn't have the prospects ahead of him graduating, I just think he would overtake a lot of these players just based on the factors of what he is in terms of a profile. Because we look at the catching position across Major League Baseball right now, and I talked about the same thing with Adley Rutschman. It is just not good in the bigs right now. It's just not good. You have a couple very good catchers, and then it's everybody else. And even some of those very good catchers, you look at a Salvador Perez, who has been spectacular this season. In fact, he's putting together one of the best offensive seasons we've ever seen from a catcher, but he's also putting together one of the worst defensive seasons in the entire league, if not the worst defensive season in the entire league, which is a far cry from where he used to be, but it just seems like his defense has just taken a hit a little bit. There's not that many catchers that can really, really hit and also play some decent defense. Francisco Alvarez projects as that, but not only that for Alvarez with me. And also, if you're not able to follow along with the list, I just realized I didn't even tell you where I have him. I have him at four. I have him at four. And to read you the top five, just to get you an idea here, Bobby Witt Jr. at number one. And I'll make that case in a moment too. Adley Rutschman at number two. Then you have Julio Rodriguez at number three, Francisco Alvarez at four. And then there is the Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson debate, which I know I talked about in the last episode. And Riley Green's ahead of Torkelson on here. I have Riley Green at five, Grayson Rodriguez at six, and Torkelson at seven. In no way is it an indictment of Spencer Torkelson. It's more so just how good I feel about Riley Green, and I'll talk about that in a moment as well to rehash some of those talking points if you didn't hear that in the last episode or just don't remember it. But with Alvarez, 19 years old as a catcher, and seeing him in person, it was just amazing to see how easy his power is able to shine through in batting practice and in the games. And the numbers that he's put up as a 19-year-old in A-ball and high A are just spectacular. And his approach, it's a little bit pull happy at times, but I don't really think that it's something that is going to get in the way of his ability to hit for a decent average, to get on base, and also, of course, hit for power. I see 70 raw power there. I see 65 game power once he gets into it. Right now, presently, probably more in the 50 range, and the raw power is presently is 65 or 70. I mean, and how much more do you need than that? It's just ridiculous, some of the exit velos he's able to put up. But when I look at his swing right now and his setup, it's really conducive to being able to repeat it a lot and being able to produce easy power without having extraneous movements or anything taking away from it. He knows how much power he has, and he really just starts preset in that back hip. He is loaded, almost preloaded into the back hip, slightly open stance. So all he really has to focus on is just bringing that leg back over. He's already in the back hip because he doesn't need this huge weight shift. He doesn't need all of this movement to generate power. He knows that he could pretty much just swing easily and send the ball over the wall. So he preloads himself, makes it as easy as possible to consistently time everything up. And he's been doing just that. His setup actually reminds me of a more simple Tyler O'Neill, because O'Neill does a similar type of thing, preset in the back hip, a little bit open, and O'Neill is similar in the physicality component where he knows he can generate easy power, and for him, he just wanted to be able to make contact enough to be able to tap into it, and he knew that his bat-to-ball skills were good enough. It was just more about the timing and everything else, and that is exactly what we're seeing with Francisco Alvarez. So while there is a little bit of a pull happiness to his approach right now that I think pitchers at the AA level may start going after a bit more, it hasn't seemed to be an issue for him. When he gets deeper in counts, he's comfortable driving it to center field in the other way. I just think he has to get forced into not trying to do damage to the pole side all the time. Regardless, he's an above average defender projection-wise. He moves very well behind the dish. He has a good arm, above average arm, and I think the receiving, obviously almost any catcher that is in the minors could make some improvements with their receiving and blocking, but he moves well behind to get behind balls. I think that there's just some small fundamental things that he has to work on behind the dish, but when it comes to the projection, there's no doubt that I see him becoming an above average defender. Being an above average defender with what he offers offensively, I mean, how is that not arguably the best catcher in baseball? If Adley Rutschman doesn't tap into his entire ceiling, then he probably is the best catcher in baseball. And the second Adley Rutschman graduates, Francisco Alvarez is the top catching prospect in baseball. When you have 70 raw power, above average defensive projection, you are keeping the strikeouts in check. You're producing as a 19-year-old, 22 home runs between low A and high A, and the strikeouts are in the low 20s between the two levels. I mean, how is this guy not a top five prospect? Again, the youth, I can't emphasize it enough. He's 19 years old. I don't need anything else, in my opinion, to really be able to come away with this guy being one of the best prospects in baseball, and he's exactly that. I wanted to talk about just why Bobby Witt is at number one as well. And it was tough because I think Adley Rutschman is right there. There's really, either way, there's no wrong answer. I think there's no wrong answer of Julio Rodriguez, Adley Rutschman, and Bobby Witt Jr. Where I lean Bobby Witt is I literally can't poke a hole in his game if I wanted to. There's not even a small hair-splitting thing that I could really find that bothers me. There used to be some swing and miss concerns, and I think he's someone that's going to strike out, and he'll probably strike out in the 20 to 25% range. But look at Fernando Tatis Jr. He strikes out 27% of the time. He offsets it with a 12% walk rate, and he hits a ton of bombs and is athletic and brings a lot of other components to the game. That's what I see with Bobby Witt Jr. is like, if his one issue is the swing and miss, but it's not egregious, and in today's game, 25% K rate is relatively just slightly below average, I'm not too worried about it. I'm really not. So that was the one thing. Sure, I'd like to see him walk a bit more. We've seen the walk rate rise a little from 2019 in that rookie ball debut. He's still more in the 9% range, which is just a tick above average. I think if he continues to put up big power numbers, we'll see him closer to the 12 to 13% range. Same arc for Fernando Tatis Jr. when guys just didn't want to pitch to him anymore. And I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. has 32 home runs between AA and AAA this year. He's got 24 stolen bases. He's got a real shot at a 30-30 season, although there's only a handful of games left. He'll have to steal a lot of bags down the stretch here. But if he really wanted it, he could have got it. And he only played 113 games this year. So to be able to do that is just spectacular. K rate at 24%, WRC plus at about 147. Not to mention that where if we're talking about him and Tatis, and I'm not trying to compare these two guys, it's just the swing and miss component, but also still having a decent hit tool, a ton of power, and good speed. The difference is, Bobby Witt Jr., while I don't think he's going to quite produce like Fernando Tatis, because what we're seeing from him offensively when he does play in terms of just production per game is just otherworldly. It's some things that we really haven't seen in a very long time. Bobby Witt Jr., though, I'm expecting him to hit 40 home runs at some point in his career. He might even do it through the first couple seasons. There might be a 40 home run campaign. The difference, too, is that he is a plus defender. I am so impressed with what I've seen from the defensive side as well. And it's easy to forget or not talk about the defense as much when you see somebody that has 32 home runs and 24 bags and is actually hitting for a good average at about .293. But I mean, he is a great defender. He can really pick it. He could win gold gloves. And when you factor that in, how is this not ultimately one of the best players in the game if everything works out? And when I look at it from that component, he is my number one prospect. You can make a lot of the same arguments, though, with Adley Rutschman, who is a great hitter, the potential to be a gold glove caliber catcher. But my one thing, my one little vice with Adley Rutschman right now is I am a little concerned about how dramatic the splits are. He is 300 OPS points better from the right side, where he's going to hit one third of the time. Albeit from the left side, he still has an 800 OPS, but from the right side, 1100 OPS or just under that. I know that an 800 OPS is still good, but we're talking about the number one prospect in baseball here. I just don't want to see that big of a discrepancy between your left and right side if you're a switch hitter. And if there is going to be that big of a discrepancy, it's got to be leaning towards the left side being better. That's not the case right now for Adley. He could even out those splits and maybe it's a different story. I still think Adley's going to be an all-star. I think he's going to be a fantastic catcher. But how high is that offensive ceiling if his left-handed swing is just not quite there compared to his right-handed swing? Just something worth watching there. As for Julio Rodriguez, I mean, I've said it so many times, his production is on par with what we saw from Wander Franco through similar levels and similar ages. He is just a freak corner outfielder that I think will be an above average outfielder out there as well. You can make the case for him at number one, and I've been a big fan of Julio Rodriguez's for some time now. I wanted, before the break, I wanted to just get into Riley Green over Torkelson to rehash some of those talking points from the last episode and why I have Green at 5 and Torkelson at 7. It is by no means an indictment on Torque, because his power, his approach, his takes are so easy. He is going to be a stud at the big league level and hit a ton of home runs and just be a masher that doesn't care that Comerica Park is absolutely massive, because it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. There's not a park in the world that would hold Spencer Torkelson. But on the flip side, he is a third baseman, first baseman. He's not a third baseman. I really just don't think he's going to be able to stick there. He impressed me a little bit with his ability to move, and I was thinking that maybe this was a little bit better than I thought it would be, because I thought it would be a disaster, but I just don't know if it's going to be justifiable to keep him at third. The arm is all right. He moves okay. The actions are not great. I just think defense is too important in today's game at third base, especially with how much they like to move these guys around. Torkelson just does not make sense for me long-term at third. Probably going to be a first baseman. He'll be an average first baseman there. It doesn't matter. The bat is really the calling card. But if we're projecting these players, or if we're putting them in the rankings how it's supposed to be, based on future value, based on WAR, I just think Riley Green's going to be better in that department. He is a good defender. I think he can stick in center field, and talk about a big difference between defensive value at first base and center field. But if Riley Green has to make a move to a corner, I think he could be a plus defender, almost gold glove caliber in the corner. He's got an above average arm. He moves really well for his size. I like the routes that he takes to balls. I think he has pretty good reads out there. He is good enough to stick in center and probably a plus defender in either corner. He also is a good base runner, could steal 15 to 20 bags. He reminds me a lot of a young Michael Brantley with a little bit more swing and miss, but maybe a little bit more power production and power projection. So you have that give and take, which I think almost every single big league team would take right now. They'll give up a little bit of a strikeout rate, right? They'll give up 5% in the K rate for more power production. It's just where we are in the game. And Green is a little bit more swing and miss than Michael Brantley, but also a little bit more power. power, and I think the tools and the skill set are similar. The other thing is Riley Green's 20. He should really still be in college if we're going by age. And Spencer Torkelson, he had those 3 years in college where he absolutely dominated. Now he's 22 years old, and that's what really helped propel him to the number one overall pick. Riley Green, instead, during those years that Torkelson was in college, demolished high A pitching, demolished double A pitching, and now he's demolishing triple A pitching. I just feel like if we did a redraft here, a lot of teams would take Riley Green ahead of Torkelson. I really feel that way based on what I've heard and based on what I would probably do too. Not an indictment on Torkelson. He's still a top 10 prospect. He still has the upside to be an MVP with the offensive caliber that he has, but I want a center fielder or at least a really athletic corner outfielder that I'm building around more so than a first baseman, especially if they both put up somewhat similar production. I think that Torkelson's obviously going to hit for more power and is going to slug more than Riley Green, but I think Riley Green's going to be able to impact the game in more ways, and it's more of a preference thing at that point. I think, of course, some teams would take Torkelson, but I definitely think or definitely know that some teams would also lean Riley Green, but you can't really go wrong there, and if you're a Detroit Tiger fan, who cares, right? You got both of them, so that's pretty damn exciting. I'm going to talk about the rest of the list, especially the back end, some guys that I put on the list that I know probably aren't on any others, and the reason why I did that. And then, of course, you can always ask me questions at RMWaitNate on Twitter, and I'm also answering the questions on the Just Baseball comments. You can comment on these articles at justbaseball.com as well, where you can go follow along with this article. Before I get to that, a reminder that this episode is brought to you in part by Freshly. Dinner time can be chaotic, but with Freshly, it's easy. Their chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week, and they take the pressure off of you. We're all trying to get in shape and eat right, and Freshly can help. Their delicious meals are designed by nutritionists, cooked by chefs, making it easier to eat better. And the best part about Freshly is everything is chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered straight to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked fresh every single week. You can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you have to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, and better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage-baked penne, or even the chicken pesto bowl. Freshly can fit your lifestyle in a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. And now, listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every single night and just start living life Freshly. Right now, if you go to Freshly.com/lockedon, Freshly is offering $40 off your first two orders. That's Freshly.com/lockedon for $40 off your first two orders. Freshly.com/lockedon for $40 off your first two orders. Also brought to you in part by Wealthfront. Decades of data show that investors who trade individual stocks underperform the market every single year. In fact, only 1% of day traders beat the market. The odds are not in your favor if you're doing it alone. Team up with Wealthfront instead. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every single day. They automatically handle all the investing based on preferences that you control. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB to get your first $5,000 managed for free. That is wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB to get started today. So jumping back into this top prospect list, where I'm going to try to fly through as many of the notable names that I felt like I had guys in different spots than others. And of course, I'm not going to be able to get to all 100. And there are some detailed write-ups, so you can still kind of get an idea why I was higher or lower on these guys, because I'll explain that in each of the write-ups. But let's get to number 9, where I think this isn't that crazy though, but Gabriel Moreno, the reason why I put him up there and the one thing I'll say is that I looked at his approach and I had to dig back through old video that I had and go back to my notes, and because he hasn't played. And the more I watched and the more I went back on my notes and thought about it, I was like, okay, yes, of course, I wanted to see some more statistical backup from what my takeaways were with his approach and his swing to really go all in on this 70 grade hit tool. But at the end of the day, this is what I see, and I see a 70 grade hit tool. And, you know, that might be really aggressive, but that's what I see out of Gabriel Moreno. And if he has a 70 grade hit tool and he's going to stick behind the dish, then that's a top 10 prospect in baseball. And that's why I have him at number 9. That is something that I know is probably a little bit high, but I really do like him there. Corbin Carroll still at 17. I'm not deterred by the injury. I think Corbin Carroll is going to be a top 15 prospect by the midseason update next year. A consensus top 15. He is so darn good. I love his approach. We were seeing higher exit velos, even though it was only 7 games this year. He has been spectacular. Another player who I gave a nice little bump to after watching him more and more and just seeing several at-bats where I just continued to be so impressed with his polish and how ahead of his years he is, my man Jordan Walker. Jordan Walker has been phenomenal. And not only from the component of his hit tool is way more advanced than anybody thought it would be, he also is just putting up crazy exit velos. I mean, I'm talking first percentile type exit velos. That was something that we knew. We knew that there was plus raw power in there. I mean, he's 6'5", 230, and he's only 19 years old as well. So I put him one spot ahead of Jason Dominguez. It wasn't like I was trying to pit the teenagers against each other, but it just was how the list ended up shaking out. But when they were that close to each other, I'm thinking, okay, yes, Dominguez is a center fielder potentially, though I do have my large concerns that he's not going to stick there. He is a plus runner, but I don't think he moves well because of his frame. He's just so heavy on his feet. So if he moves to a corner, which is what I think is going to happen, and we're considering the bats against each other, what we've seen from Jordan Walker, who's just a few months older than Jason Dominguez at the high A level, is just ridiculous. He's putting up crazy power numbers through low A and high A. His swing is simple. I'd actually liken it to a righty, more simple Yelich, where he starts upright and then just really sinks into that back hip, and it's so smooth, rhythmic, and repeatable, and he does just that. I'm so excited about this kid, and I think he's going to be another guy that's going to be a top 10 prospect very, very soon. I got some questions on why I had Brett Baty so high, and Brett Baty is at 20 on the list, and no doubt a very high grade compared to where a lot of others have him, but I've seen him just quickly climbing up as well. What I like about Baty is, yes, there's some swing and miss there, no doubt, but he's 21 and already in Double A, and already is an important emphasis because he was drafted in 2019, made his way up to Low A or short season A ball for a cup of coffee before the season ended, did not get to play in 2020. So this is really his first full season, and you know what? He has been better than anybody could have imagined. I mean, he has been spectacular. Even in Double A now, holding his own, 113 WRC plus. The power numbers have slowed a little bit, but the K rate has remained consistent. He's walking the same rate at about 12%, and he's just been a bit unlucky as well when it comes to the batting average on balls in play. So all things considered, I really expect Brett Baty to be a well-rounded offensive third baseman that still plays some pretty solid defense there too. I think that there's 30 home run power there from the left side and also a good feel to hit. He will strike out, but he's going to walk a ton, and that's what really gives me a lot of confidence in him. His power to all fields display has been fantastic as well. He showed me some great things going the other way, leaving the yard, which I just feel like is going to translate into consistent production at the highest level, and it's going to allow him to adapt to how he's being pitched to. There's not really a way to beat him that I see right now, that just some gaping hole in his approach or gaping hole in his swing. And I will say this, you look at Fangraphs, they actually have him higher than I do. Fangraphs has him at 14. So, I mean, it's not that outrageous to have him at 20. I think Fangraphs likes probably the batted ball data on him as well. He has some ridiculous exit velos even going the other way. And I'm very excited about what the Mets have there in Brett Baty. Definitely higher on these Mets guys. I can't lie. I definitely am. I'm going to get to one other Mets guy that I was asked about, but before that, I also really am excited about what I've seen from Nick York. I mean, Nick York, just no doubt a plus hitter. His approach is fantastic. I think he's better than a plus hitter. I'd probably put a 65 on his hit tool, and you know what? He's probably one of the higher-end hit tools in all of this top 100 list, and the more I watch, if he continues to put up these numbers and show this steady approach through the higher levels, we got to really consider giving him a plus-plus on the hit tool. He has an incredible knack for manipulating the barrel, for being able to get his bat to where the ball is pitched, to adjusting in between pitches. He is comfortable with two strikes. He is able to leverage hitters' counts. He does damage when he needs to. The power is way more present than I thought it would be. He has been putting up some pretty solid exit velos. He's been putting up some monstrous home runs with little effort. There's no effort to his swing, despite being 6 foot, if that, and about 190 pounds. He is hitting balls 430 feet. I mean, it's just crazy. And when you look at what he does at bat, I saw him a few weeks ago, and he just continued to make these in-at-bat adjustments that I couldn't miss. It was impressive. He gets beat on a pitch. He doesn't get beat on it again. It's like he knows what you're going to do before you do it to him, and that's why he's been so difficult to strike out. He spoils tough pitches. He's has a lot in common with Nick Gonzalez, frankly, who I have at 31. The two are very similar. I also had Lawler ahead of Mayer. Jordan Lawler ahead of Marcelo Mayer. And I think some people may be like, oh, why'd you do that? Because I think everybody had Mayer there. At the end of the day, it's really hard to rank these draft guys. And if you remember what I talked about in the MLB Pipeline Top 100, is that I feel like they always go really high on the recently drafted guys that haven't even played yet, because you can kind of dream on them and they haven't showed you anything to be worried about that, you know, maybe you don't even know about yet, because there's always some issues that prospects will come across that maybe we didn't know going into the draft. Otherwise, drafting would be way too easy. With Mayer, I just feel like there's more pressure on the bat. And I think there's a very good chance he could end up being a better offensive prospect than Jordan Lawler. But I think that the ceiling for Lawler offensively is right there with Mayer. He's got plus raw power. He's shown a good approach. I think his swing is pretty compact, efficient. His body control is great. I think that Lawler is going to hit, and he's got the power. He is a plus defender, to say the least, and that's what really makes it easier for me, is plus defender, plus runner, and still has the offensive upside. I'd say Mayer has a higher offensive floor, but the general floor is higher for Lawler at a premium position at shortstop. I'm going to fall back on the guy that has plus athleticism, has the ability to be a gold glove caliber shortstop, whereas Mayer, there's more pressure on the bat. It's just that simple. Some of the other guys I wanted to talk to as I go through the rest of this list, Curtis Meade. I know I've mentioned Curtis Meade a little bit in the past, but the fact that the Rays were willing to let him skip double A, I think that kind of says everything you need to know. He went from high A straight to triple A. I don't think he's going to be somebody that is competing for MVPs, but not everybody on this top 100 list is supposed to do that. Some of these guys are really high floor, good chance to be an above average big leaguer, and I think Curtis Meade is exactly that, but there's room for more. I think he could be a multi-all-star if he continues to fill out, adds a little bit of strength and a little bit of power, but I've been impressed with what we've seen from him. His approach is fantastic. He doesn't swing and miss. He is as high of a floor guy you're going to find on this list. Some other players as I get towards the back end here, Andy Pages, he needs to be on every single top 100 list, every single one. His power is prolific. He's 20 years old. He is spectacular, and he's a good athlete. I like everything that I've seen from him, and yes, he expands his zone. There's a little bit of swing and miss, but he's so young, and the power potential is just crazy. Dodgers track record of developing prospects. I have no doubt that they're going to help this guy get to the next level. And my gosh, I mean, the power there is crazy to all fields. He's just learning how to hit too, and he's been able to hit 30 home runs in A ball. I mean, it's just been really, really impressive from him. And I think that he's going to be a top 50 guy very soon. The other one was Vientos back at 44. I realized I skipped over him. Mark Vientos, same thing with the power, but what really impressed me with Vientos is that he's missing baseballs, like straight up missing baseballs that I don't even know how they get out, like straight up in the air off the bat, and they're going out to right center. That's the kind of power he has, the kind of power that I don't really see very often. I'm talking very few players in the big leagues that miss balls like that, like straight up in the air, but carry out of the yard. I think that he's got some of the best raw power in minor league baseball. I put 70 on it, and he's tapping into it now. He's walking more than ever. The approach is looking good. I'm a big fan of Mark Vientos. I think he's going to be a 30-plus, maybe 40 home run guy in the big leagues. As we get towards the back end of the list here, some other notable names, Kevin Alcantara, I like him a lot. Obviously, high variance guy coming from the Yankees over to the Cubs in that trade for Anthony Rizzo, but the upside is just too exciting. I put him there at 86. Some other names, Joey Weimer, he makes the cut. I mean, just look at the numbers. After talking to Joey Weimer too, if you didn't see that episode, interviewed him recently, did not put him on just because I interviewed him, I promise, but he is also an awesome guy. Unreal power and a good feel to hit. He made adjustments with his swing that he talks about in that episode, which I really like. He has figured out what works for him, and he plays like his hair is on fire. I just like what we've seen from him a ton. Alan Serta, another name that may not be a big one that makes the list at 98 with the Reds. Have heard nothing but fantastic things about Serta. Will soon be one of the best offensive prospects in that Red system. I definitely stand behind that one. Miguel Vargas, another Dodgers prospect. Not like Pages, where he actually has a ridiculously good feel to hit, and now the power is translating, so that is always good. When the power comes second, but it really starts to shine through, those are guys that I have a high confidence interval in. And then, of course, Kyle Harrison at 67 with the Giants, left-handed pitcher. I see a lot of Trevor Rogers in this guy with the Marlins. Fastball sets the tone, high spin, sneaks up on you, plays well up, plays well down, sets up his changeup really well. Slider is making some progress. Kyle Harrison reminds me a lot of Trevor Rogers, 20 years old, crazy strikeout rates in high A, really in his first professional season. Then one or two other names I wanted to get to real quickly. Corey Lee, catching prospect with the Astros, cracks the list just purely on his offensive production. He's going to stick behind the dish. He was a big, big development for this Astro system. That's not great. So for the Astros to be able to have some guys start to hit there is a great, great situation for them. And they've had some guys progress this year. I'm trying to think of anybody else that stands out that I know some people may be surprised by. Yuri Perez, I've talked about him. Marlins pitching prospect. He's 6'8" and is just consistently throwing strikes. His fastball is electric. He's showing a good feel for the curveball. The changeup looks strong. He got the call up to high A for the Marlins and has been carving up there. I'm really excited about Perez, and some team officials that I've talked to have said this guy's a top 50 prospect in baseball. I don't know why the list don't show it. And I'm not just talking about the Marlins team officials. I'm talking about other teams and other scouts that have looked at him and have said the same thing. I mean, we're talking about a 6'8 pitcher who throws strikes, repeats his mechanics well. To me, that's a unicorn. I mean, usually you have guys with long levers, they really struggle to repeat those mechanics and throw strikes early on. And he's a unicorn for being 18, 19 years old, and actually he's 18 years old, excuse me, and being 6'8", but he's even more of a unicorn for being able to control those mechanics and command it. The one other player I wanted to highlight real quick before we wrap up is Oswald Peraza. Peraza has very much just boosted his stock like crazy. The fact that he's able to show some more power now, he can really pick it defensively. He's no doubt sticking at shortstop. He has hit a ton of home runs over the last couple weeks, but it just continues to barrel baseballs up and make it look easy. What was really surprised me, both between him and Volpe, they both have just shown this explosion of power, which again, prospects where the power is the last thing to come are generally guys that are going to have a higher translation or higher rate of success. It's just the way it has worked, and the track record shows that. With Peraza, what I like about him is he's similar to Bichette in the respect that he doesn't have the raw power of Bichette, of course, but what I like about him is the way he leverages counts and the way he goes after early in counts and has the confidence in himself when he's behind. What he does is he has a slow leg kick where he looks to try to do some damage early in the count, but with two strikes, he will shorten up, he'll shorten the stride, and he just looks to put the ball in play, and that's where he is also great because of those great bat-to-ball skills and a good approach. I think he's got a shot to be a plus hitter. We've seen above-average raw power now, above-average defender, and a solid runner. He's got everything going for him. He's got to be that shortstop of the future for the Yankees. I think that it is Oswald Peraza. We'll see where Volpe ends up. I think his offensive profile is really exciting as well, and also a good glove projection there. Could play second, could even play third. I think he has the arm for it. Volpe does, and also clearly has shown that he could hit enough power-wise, production-wise, to be able to anchor a third base position too, especially at Yankee Stadium. If you have any other questions, feel free to DM me at RMLayton8 on Twitter. I'm always happy to answer it. I enjoyed some of the questions that came in from the MLB Pipeline episode. I'm sure I'll have even more based on the fact that this is my actual top 100 list. So hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy the write-ups, and always open any discussion and questions. And also, you can check out the article at justbaseball.com. I also have it linked in the description of the episode as well. As always, thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to talking baseball and talking prospects with you next week.